soft and tender are her skies. Yes and no are the answers written in autumn's leaving and winter's coming. I think that I'll be moving along. I've got to leave her and find another. I've got to sing my heart's true song. Round and round the burning circle, all the seasons, 1, 2, and 3. Autumn comes, and then the winter. Spring is born, and silver burned my autumns all too soon. They'd fade and die, and then why there were no others, milk and honey.
Well, another show, and we're done here. Jackson C. Frank, Milk and Honey from the Complete Recordings on Bada Bing Records from 10 years ago. There's a documentary coming out on Jackson C. Frank sometime very soon, I believe. It's kind of a not as well known from that era of folk singers. But some great songs. Anyway, Milk and Honey. Anjali from, or is it Gili? From Lixgrin, from the archive box, 1983 to 2005. We heard two untitled pieces from that particular album from 83. Tomaga and Pierre Bastien from Bandiera di Carta. We heard Senza, Madeline Kokalas from Spectral, and Then I Watch It Fall Apart on Room 40. Francisco Merino from Surrender, Render, End on the Helen Scarsdale Agency label. We heard Arguments for Laziness. I'm really sad that I missed Francisco Merino's performance like about, I don't know, it was last week sometime. I just couldn't, I was sick. Couldn't make it. Damn. Andrew Bernstein from the Great Outdoors album. We heard Black Noise and Toad. Unfortunately, there was a glitch in that particular recording. I'll have to pull out another copy for next week or another time. Actually, I won't be here next week. Actually, next 2 weeks, DJ Donna will be filling in for me. This time not for due to physical ailments, infirmities, bugs of all kinds, but more of a pleasure sort. Anyway, thanks for listening. This is Freeform Radio, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. Stay tuned for Miracle Nutrition. See ya.
It's the Hardy White Show now. It's the Miracle Nutrition now. It's the Hardy White. It's tonight. Hardy White Show now. It's the Miracle Nutrition Show with Hardy White tonight. He's got some things to say to you. It's Hardy White tonight. It is the Miracle Nutrition Show. A Miracle Nutrition Show. Miracles, nutrition, and Hardy White.
I have always had the urge to teach. I say urge like it's bowel pressure or something. Oh, I have this urge to go. Let it rip. And moving your bowels, like teaching, really depends on circumstance as to whether it's appropriate or not. Like, is this a teaching moment, teaching/pooping moment, or do I need to go to a venue where that's anticipated and so there'll be facilities? And I say, well, it's something that on the radio you can do both in a way. And that's what I do. That's my teaching style. I learn something and I immediately want to get it out to you. And it's like I can't keep any of my food down or something, but it's information. And so I aspirate vomitous facts and stories, and not stories, you know I don't like them. But I say things, oh my goodness, because I want you to learn more about your world. Why not? It's lovely to see things. I like to know how magic is done. I've been watching lots of YouTube videos on magic and card tricks and sleight of hand and all. And I learn, it's a beautiful thing, because as you learn how things are done, it destroys the mystery for you and the surprise. And you go, ah, oh, okay, is that all there is to being Peggy Lee? And you say, yeah, that's it. And I could say, okay, if my hands were bigger, I could do that. But I have learned certain things from magic, even though I can't do it now. That's another thing. So I can see how that's done now. So it's ruined, but then I haven't learned a skill. So that's, I can't think of any kind of other thing except for maybe physics that's like that. Maybe math. I never, oh, bless me. I wish I had gotten my brain around math. Then I could do just even the simplest retail job. But you just stumped me from day, I want to say day one, but I'm not sure that's the right number. I get confused when it comes to quantifying things. You know, I don't think maybe I have a philosophical problem with quantity or with numbers or something like that. And even when they say, well, okay, well, I know you maybe have a problem with numbers. We'll substitute letters or animal shapes for it, which is, I think, they do in logic. So, oh, I can say a bunny plus, what is that, a hat equals, I don't even know, you know, knowing. I wish I had gotten into, I tried to take courses. See, I'm a very curious person. I want to learn. But sometimes, even if you take the course, you need somebody to teach you how to learn the course or something. I did that all the time in course. I'd raise my hand and go, I think I've been put in too high a level. And they say, well, there is no lower one. And I say, fair enough. So have you tried studying? It's not the studying, it's focusing, maybe. I don't know. You're losing me. You'll say things. This is my problem in school. So the lecturer will say a thing, and it some fascinating, compelling idea or image. And my imagination is off and running. And I'm in my head having a wonderful adventure with this brand new piece of info. Meanwhile, 30 more bits of information go by, and I miss them because I'm still sucking the frosting off the first one. And I don't, I'm sure other people like that. Oh, yes, I'll look through my neurology book. You've got, I don't know, because I don't think it doesn't feel, I've had this feeling in church before where it's like, what y'all are doing are working too well, and now I don't need you. No, I just say, I always need teaching. Gosh, I'm glad I don't have that degree of arrogance. I've seen people who know a little bit of a thing talk to a person who knows a lot of a thing and like an equal. And then they are equals, as in God's eyes, but my word. I think maybe I wonder if the internet's done that, where my little bit of study is just as much as your immersive thing. I say that to monks, cloistered monks. I go, I know where you're coming from, because I spend a lot of time in my basement studio. And they say, no, it's different. I wish I sometimes use the time machine to visit with Father Thomas Merton, and it might go a little something like this. I don't know how Merton's, have I ever heard recordings of him? I think I have. Thomas Merton was a monk, and I've read a lot of his books. Why? I don't know. There must have been some in a doctor's waiting room I was in, because I was at the doctor's because I wanted to share with her some things that I'd learned about medicine. And I would say, oh, there's nothing really wrong with me today, doc, but I don't know whether you know, but I did learn today that the head bone is connected to the neck bone. And I learned that I was doing some volunteer work at a day school. So I feel like is all knowledge equal? All fake knowledge is equal. That's for sure. Oh my goodness. What's that? What do you mean fake knowledge? I don't mean fake knowledge. Well, you know, there's information in the universe. It doesn't refer to much, I think. Like, I don't know if you've read the Jibender series of Mashonal Kingdom books by Lance Bobarach, but what a fantastic world Lance has created. And there are encyclopedias and dictionaries of all the creatures in there. But the thing is, they're mainly just things that Lance came up with. And they are just things that Lance learned, put through a filter of his misunderstanding. And I love that in art. I like when people look at a thing and then put it down and it's all psygoglin. It's a new way of looking at a thing. That looks like a child's drawing. Yes, because I want some things that are made with fresh eyes. Now I've scared myself because I have nightmares about someone making me get fresh eyes. All right, those eyes have to go. No. I don't really have any eyes being plucked from my head nightmares. And sometimes I wonder, like, oh, is that because it's going to happen in real life? You don't know, I could be on a battlefield or something and I can't move and this vulture sweeps down. I go, please don't, not my left eye. Oh, that's so gruesome. Oh, Hardy, there might be children listening. We used to realize, I think, the terror, injustice, horror, and nightmarish quality of the world and acknowledge it more with children's fiction than now. Maybe it's gotten better. But especially in today's world, I would say even pre-verbal, you should be showing children like Clockwork Orange or something and just getting them ready. You know, that's the new. But say, I don't know. I'm just kidding. I liked Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, but it's a camp where you can send children. And I don't think they'd enjoy that. You want to be with your parents. I'd want to be with my parents if I met him. I go, I love Mr. Rogers. Could you go with me, though? I'm not afraid of him. It's just adults in general. I always bring I have imaginary family with me all the time to give me strength and courage. And sometimes I talk to them and they give me, I wish I could forced myself not to do it at my doctor's appointments. Because she's like, well, who are you talking to? And then it gets real scary to me. Well, the other day I heard, I was looking at snippets of things online. That's how I learn everything. And I'm going to come back to the magic because I want to talk about making playing cards disappear, which I just did. I wish I could share it with you. Now it's back. Now it's gone. And this was Jeff Bridges, who's in the Big Lebowski, talking about Big Lebowski and saying, did you know that there was a theory that Donnie is just a figment of John Goodman's imagination, of Walter's imagination, and that nobody else can see him, and he's a dead war buddy. And I'm not going to go through the picture. This got to show us. I love your new podcast about movies. It's not that. I am getting to a bigger idea. So I started to think, how many, and it's not just in, you could do this in fiction. You say, oh, well, let's say if you notice in a piece of work, for instance, the first season of MASH, the black guy, Hawkeye never seems to talk to him. So you're thinking, well, maybe he is Trapper John's imaginary friend. Or if you see it something like that, you could say, well, that holds up. Like, I could really see where, that character could be imaginary. And then you think in, like, real life, you say, can other people see, like, Tommy? And the movie? No, my buddy Tommy or something. No one seems to be talking to him. That kind of thing, what's real? And I think, well, there's other people have imaginary friends around them. I know I do a little bit. And I bring my radio friends with me, because they give me courage and comfort. And I hope they do you too. I don't want you doing voices though, because socially it's going to knock you down a notch. I always thought that. I heard I was having a lunch with a rabbi, and we were talking about really deep things, and he did a Bullwinkle impression. And I politely got up. I said, excuse me. I just sicked in my mouth a little bit, and I got to go. I'd rather spit it than re-swallow. And I will be bidding you adieu. Now you're saying, well, that is, you're a hypocrite because you sit there and you do voices from old cartoons and all. And I do them for demonstration purposes, first of all. Second of all, I also do them to demonstrate how derivative all voice artists are. And you say you get mad when they use, like, Scarlett Johansson for a cartoon voiceover or something, but then it's really hard to do her. Because voiceover artists, when they do it, they want to be engaging and interesting. And so they may often do too much, or they do an impression of a voice they've heard that they thought was engaging and interesting. And I like to do that too. Also because I'm going to confess something a little bit. I don't do this professionally, but I amateurly pander. So a lot of things I do, I say, oh, nostalgia. I know a lot of listeners are going to remember this. Oh, you remember Kimba or something like that? Remember Dondi and the Funny Papers? And then you can, I remember. And then that nostalgia becomes a touchstone, and they got that picture in their mind, and you can goof on it. And I do that, and that is definitely pandering because I have, and I don't know if anybody else has this desire to have people like me. Not everybody. Not me. I don't care if people like me. When someone says that to me, I say, well, I'm going to fulfill one of your wishes. I would say that might be a thing to keep to yourself, unless you really actively don't want anybody to like you. So I would make a good friend. Why? Because I'm uncaring. Okay.
That's good.
I'm detached. That's the way I've dealt with it. That's the way I've confronted this mortal realm, is that I'm just gonna look away. I don't mind looking at it. I feel like I had this thought the other day. I was thinking, if I could be shown my whole life, like my future and all, would I look at it? If someone says, you know, it's accessible if you take this meditation course. Well, there's a famous director that meditated in this. Okay, well, that's good. And then you will see everything, your future and your past all at once. But then it occurred to me that might already be happening. I'm just processing it so slowly that it seems like it's unfolding. And I realize that when I'm in fiction or something, as I learn things, they seem like they're unfolding, but they were that way all along. When I look at magic tricks, something I've noticed now and something I've learned is sometimes the switch happens way earlier than you think it does. So if I'm doing a card trick, I might replace the card that you're going to be keeping your eye on way earlier than you realized I did, so that the entire length and duration of the trick is just you paying attention to something that is moot. It's already happened. You think that's the Ace of Spades? It hasn't been the Ace of Spades for a good minute and a half, but we're still doing things with it. Now it's in my armpit. Now it's here. Now I'm going to blow on it and put a pencil through it. But it isn't the thing that you thought it was. That switch already happened. Your fate is sealed. Now it's just vamping. And then, oh boy, are you going to be surprised, because you're going to think the switch happened right before that happened, just like magic. And not that it was concealed consequences, or what do you call it? Concealed, what happens before, what do you call it? Cause. And then, so concealed cause, that sounds good. Write that one down. All right. When I've read, have you ever read a lecture that's been transposed or something, like by a famous physicist or philosopher or something? This book is a series of lectures that Dr. So-and-so gave over a period of a week at... And they're always nicely written. You think this is not just a transcription of something that they said off the top of their head, is it? Like a Shakespearean folio or something? It's something that was written and then published by written lectures. But you wonder if the spoken version wasn't different, much in the same way as my dinner with Andre. Because, you know, they didn't follow the script exactly. So I've seen the script, and then I've seen the transposing of what was in the movie. And they're slightly different. So, what are you seeing? What? You lost me. I'm so glad I lost you. Can you imagine having your bearings in a house of mirrors? How unfun.
I know exactly where I am.
Then you're not really going to have the full experience. The full experience comes from being disoriented. That's why some people, if the art isn't good enough, they got to dose. Because it's like, I got to make up for your lack of effort. So if somebody has to take drugs to watch and enjoy your movie, maybe you could have done a little more work on it. Because, boy, I've watched things that just feel like, gosh, I'm glad I didn't enhance that. That would have been too much, because that was wonderful. Oh, I've been taken on a journey. Where am I going? It's like when Mr. Rogers pops in a video. Was it always a videotape? Well, they didn't have video when I was a kid. I must have been watching Mr. Rogers when I was an adult, too. But he would get a videotape from Mr. Wiggins or whatever, or Mr. McFeely, and he'd put it in the wall, and then the picture frame would show us like a crayon factory. But before that, I think videos of crayon factories, but what did he show them on? What medium? I don't remember him getting like a big, the huge 16mm, 35mm print of Funtime Jazz at the Crayon Factory is here. And that's the thing, too. Like, I come from a generation that if I went to a factory, I'd be like, why is there no jaunty jazz playing? I thought everything from Sesame Street, everything had like, you know, doop-a-da-ba-boo, things were made
to, I don't know, hard bop or something, or to at least some kind of piano noodling. There's just Jackie Byard playing in the corner of every factory and manufacturing job. In my mind, what a beautiful world. Why destroy that? I know it never happened, but now it never will. So I don't know. I think I could be convinced to do a repetitive task if there was some sort of entertainment. And I know that people rolled cigars to a person reading from a book. Say, call me Ishmael. Roll, 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 roll. I don't know. That sounds like that was Victor Borge rolling a cigar. But they had people read to them so they wouldn't get bored because they were doing something repetitive. Now, I've been to jazz clubs where they give you something like, they go, do you need a stem? I go, give me something to play with. I love it, but I'll concentrate better on the music if I've got something to fiddle with and make sure it's quiet. You know, say, here, try these. They're crocheted healthy balls. Oh, I have some like these, but they're steel. And those metal balls, do you have those? Did you know this? I have some copper healthy balls. Look, stop with that for a moment. But there's a kind of balls, two metal balls, or they can be jade or elephant tusk, and you roll them in your hand. And I don't know where I first got mine, some kind of import store, but now I own, and they have a name, but I don't care what it is. And you roll them in your hand, and they relax you somehow. So I have some all different sizes and makes. I have big steel ones, and I have some copper ones. Now, the thing with copper, and you might have known with pennies, that when copper touches certain chemicals in your hand, it releases an odor, which copper doesn't have. That's your hand sweat reacting with the copper and creating terpentine. They've named it and everything. I'm going to name it Bippy. No, you can't. It has a chemical name. I don't know, but that's not my world. So, I'll never remember it. That's the thing with, I read a lot of Japanese literature and translation, and I love it. And authors' names, sometimes I get messed up because I don't speak Japanese, and it's not in my life a lot, and I'm not used to saying people's names. So it all gets jumbled up in my head. Well, you're an idiot. That is a huge factor, I realize, but it's not everything. And so it's using things. First of all, I don't want to digress. Digress, that's all you do, brother. I know. I know, we're not going anywhere. I'm so sorry, this isn't a tour, it's a meander. Which is a tour. I mean, that's what you do. If we were in a city and you said, give me a tour, I wouldn't do the same thing twice. I'd get so bored and I wouldn't notice things. The thing is to meander and then notice and comment and say, let's go and explore things together. My brain will be in a better place if I'm on high alert than if I'm just going through the paces. And so if I had a business, you would never go to the same office twice. I think that just makes your brain lazy. So I don't mind having people come to the office, but it has to be a different one every day. It would be lovely if you could have different ones during the same day, but having thousands of offices, I don't know if that's possible. That's why I've invented a multi-office. I don't have any inventions for it or things like that. Gosh, I'm glad I'm not in skit comedy. I just realized that if you say something like that and you go, why don't you write that up as a skit? Oh boy, oh boy. You know, something that's a 2-second move, you shouldn't make it into a 30-minute meditation. I think I've always thought that with a musical phrase or a special thing you do with a lover. You know, just everything. It's, oh, my goodness. Being with you. Other humans, you know what's going on. Let's not lie. They are the cards. They hide the cards on us. And so I've been looking at that pee under that cup. I know where it is. Yeah, well, I got bad news for you. That pee hadn't been under that cup in a long time. God scooped that into his lap ages ago.
Now you're just watching it thinking, it's under there.
No. No. In fact, there may not be a pee. In fact, the pee won't appear until you pick a cup, and then it goes under the wrong one. Oh, I know. I'm so sorry. That's because Schrodinger is the magician. Schrodinger's three-card Monty. And just like whatever card you pick is going to be wrong because they switch it out as you pick it. And that, so it does, is that really how things work? I don't know, man. I tell you, I know some physicists and everything, and I have lunched with many of them. And they won't talk about physics with me because they all insist that I wouldn't understand and that I would somehow misunderstand it. And I go, man, y'all don't, they won't even tell me how mayonnaise is made, because we were sitting there and I said, gosh, I'm curious. I know that you're a chemist, Mark. How is mayonnaise made? And they said, well, I don't know that you wouldn't understand. So I'm just going to tell you, whip up oil and egg yolk. I'm not going to tell you how much. But that's it. I had to go and learn that myself because I'm curious and because I do my research. The only research I really do actively is on my internal world, because the outward one, I don't know what the point is. And I sort of am dependent on others. I see these other humans, I go, they've got to be for something. And then I realize that perhaps it's to spread around specialization. I don't know exactly, but it just feels like, you know, if you live your life with others, everything feels a little bit more spread out in a good way. Like it's not all on you, that the weight is sort of suspended on the shoulders of many. And that's why we have ideas like a minion and everything like that. Because, for instance, grieving, if you're very sad, it's easier to do it around a real group of people because there's, you know, you need that love energy, and also you dissipate a little and you go, wow, the world's not all about me. And that unburdens you. And I feel like that when I'm dealing with my own mortality. How would I let go of my life, you know? Because it feels like the most important thing in the world to me. And it feels like the ultimate failure would be my life is over. You know, you had one thing to do. And that sort of feels like that. And it'd be a lonely thing, your own mortality. Unless you're around a lot of people. And then it's sort of different. And you realize that, oh, wait a minute. So they're going through it too. We're all going through it. Maybe I'm not the main focus of this whole thing. And maybe your thoughts pop out of your own head a little bit and go back out into the big spherosphone. I made that word up. I don't have words for everything, and nor do I want them. I'm not trying to codify anything. I'm not trying to make rules. I don't want you to remember anything I say. I am trying to get that feeling that you have with very relaxing music, or it's just something, some ambience that makes you feel a thing, not necessarily think it. And a lot of the appeal of certain type of thinking is getting towards a feeling when you think about it. Ah, see? So you thought about it, you had an epiphany, you got an aha moment, and you realize that's actually an experience. That's a pleasure thing. So I've gotten to pleasure through my intellect. I had a thought, and it made me go, ah, like that. So you can fake that. And you can trick yourself into thinking you've made a tremendous discovery. I don't, you know, because the real ones might be that too. Those ahas aren't always real. But know that your brain can do that, and you'll have a different relationship to information in general. It's like all these emotions that are coming from me realizing things. Well, the fiction and the reality are hitting exactly the same, in much the same way as a dream can make you profoundly sad or frightened, even though your life isn't really threatened. So you can learn a thing that's wrong, but it can drive you to despair. And I've seen that happen on, like, Columbo or something. You know, they put some thought in somebody's head, and it's wrong. And, you know, maybe she jumped out of the window because you told her that the world was going to be invaded by these cowboy aliens.
They're not cowboy aliens, Lieutenant.
I don't know. Then he goes on to explain the nuance of it, but that's the, just the same. The damage has been done. Because I was watching that Manson documentary, and then I watched the Beastie Boys documentary, and they're not very similar. But I was wondering what if the Beastie Boys documentary had been directed by Errol Morris, and it might go a little something like this. Or a Spike Jonze directed Manson one. That, I don't know. That feels like a better fit. But I realized, like, oh gosh, social dynamics and friend groups and things like that. Okay, they have that in common. Friend groups. Another friend group that when I was watching the Beastie Boys documentary, they mentioned that they self-identified about 10% as the Three Stooges. And I've never seen a group of three people that fit not just the Three Stooges in general, but you can exact stooge them. So Ad-Rock is clearly Mo. There's a lot of Mo-ness going on. Mike D, everybody goes like, Larry, you know.
I'm Mike D and I'm warning you.
That's what's his name's impression. I'm sorry I'm doing someone else's impression of Larry Fine. I've got to find a better thing to say as Larry Fine.
Are you all right, Mo? Is this your lip?
So Mike D is Larry, and then Yauch is like Curly and Shemp and all rolled up into one, I think. That's clear. And so they are the... Now, the Fat Boys aren't as easy to do. They're more like the Ritz Brothers of rap. So there's no perfect one-on-one correlation for all of those. But you think about friend groups like that. Are you in... What type are you in? Are you in one where you've got an identity? Like, oh, I'm the Mo. Or if it's an old 40s war movie, you know, oh, I'm Cowboy or Blackie or somebody, some identity. You know, I'm Indiana. Everybody's just their state. But they've got the special thing they do. Like on Hogan's Heroes, I'm the munitions expert. I'm the radio guy. I'm blimey. So they all have their special thing. And is it that kind of friend group? Or is it more like the Manson family? Say, like, more egalitarian like that, but with an authoritarian main figure. So I don't know what the model would be for that. I wonder. Probably not maybe a band. Well, there's two different types of bands. There's the Beatles and James Brown, right? So James Brown is the Manson model, where it's about James, and the family could come and go. But then there's the kind of band where, like the Beatles, where there's a Mo role or there's a Larry Beatle. And I don't, this has to do with archetype. My next book, you're going to love my next book because it's two things that my other books haven't been. One, pop-up, which is an underutilized technology. I did not realize that a lot of those books are handcrafted here. You don't have to make them overseas or anything. And the other thing, it is scented, which is something else is falling out of fashion. I was thinking of doing like a Pat the Bunny. I don't know if you're familiar with this classic book, but Pat the Bunny was this wonderful interactive book where you could stick your finger through some of the pages and everything there. I think they were made of cardboard, or I have an older one that's all steel. And then say, this is Daddy's beard. And you'd feel it. And it was like, I don't know whether they used a real human face. I worry about that it was sort of like, oh, God. Because it really felt like that. And then the other one would be Bunny. And I got mixed feelings about that too. But it was, it was bunny fur, I guess. And what else was in there? Cigarettes. I don't know, but you, a mirror, I don't know, but you did something, you know, like put your, and it was to get children used to sticking their fingers in holes and stuff, like outlets. So I look at this book, just if you see something, put your finger in it, you're supposed to, and then turn around, it's an elephant. Kid would electrocute themselves like that, saying, I want my finger to be an elephant's trunk, and they'd stick it into an electrical outlet. And this is, you can't do that now, they changed the outlet shape. But there used to be, the old-timey outlets were called baby finger outlets, because that was the dimension that it was. And they, I guess that one of the guys who had come up with the idea used his kid's finger as the, you know, as the mold. But those are just, now you probably need to talk to an old-timer like me to get some of this info. My neighbor decided that they didn't really like that my black walnut trees were taking out their power line. So, and the black walnuts are a menace. It's like living on a golf course, but worse. And because nobody can hit. Like every ball that's hit is hit into your property. So we agreed that we're going to take them down. They're native here. It's not a, you know, it's not a big deal. They grow when you don't want them to. Black walnuts. You can eat them if you can get into it, but it's a challenge. You'll burn 10 times the calories opening a black walnut as it provides. So we had the trees removed, and I just saw them, and I said, well, now you can grow tomatoes. And they said, what are you talking about? And I said, well, black walnuts poison tomatoes. And they gave me a look like I was it was a positive one, but it was like, you know, thanks, quaint old timey local. And then I realized, oh no, you know, but I don't mind. I welcome and I embrace that as your older neighbor. Hey, you know, need anything? No, sir. I don't like when people call me sir. I think they're being condescending. I know it's, I don't, please don't call me that. Are you mocking me? I'm going to start saying that when people are polite to me. How are you, sir? Are you making fun? I don't know if I always feel like that. I had a friend, acquaintance, who walked into it was like some kind of chain bookstore, and they had a greeter. It wasn't an older person greeter. It was just one of the employees there wearing their little vest and name tag and walked in and looked at my friend and said, you know, hello. And my friend stopped and looked at them and said, and I think it's in a sincere way, but everything that came out of this person's mouth also sounded withering. And he said, do I know you? Like that. And no, the guy said, but I don't think he didn't mean anything by it. He was just like, why is this person saying hello to me? Like, is that, what's up with that? Is the store saying hello? Are you, I don't get it either, really, the greeter. That's kind of strange. I expected at someone's house, like, you know, there to be a doorman. But if I go to a big box store and someone's going, hello, I go, what? The next thing you're going to ask me is some security thing, right? Could I get you to step over here? So just the hello without any authoritarian command behind it freaks me out. Because I always read something into it. You're letting me know you know I'm here kind of thing. So I don't like it too much. Because they're also like they're stealing me and my friend's thing where we say hello to one another. Because we know one another. So I don't know. Maybe you're just getting old. I realize I am. I'm not as old as a lot of other people who are shoving their opinions down your throat. I've noticed that. My goodness, the tyranny of the elderly. We just, they won't go away. I feel like that way with the dead, too. The dead just absolutely do a bunch of things that, now I'm doing this to ensure that my will and opinion will be carried on long past my death. Yes, sir. So I have the assurance that generations from now, nothing will change, and in my way, and my desires will be fulfilled. Yes. So that's really strange, and you think, well, who's your boss? Oh, long dead, my moldering in the grave. Then now, take that back even generations. It's amazing.
Let's see what great-great-great-grandfather wants us to do.
Sometimes it's a good idea, obviously. And I would look at great-great-great-grandfather's book of successful crop yields. You say, this year, the year we did this, this happened. That feels like valuable to me.
Everyone named Johnson is a witch.
That isn't, you see, that would like, I don't want that to, Grandpa should take that one with him. And bless you so much.
Oh, we all have some sort of view of the world, terrifying that it's different and subjective largely and based on misperception.
Ooh.
It's just you're sharing the world with a lot of very terrible. What if Mr. Magoo, that bizarre ableist cartoon from the 60s with the fellow's vision impaired,
he really has after I read some Oliver Sacks books, I realized that he's probably not vision impaired. He probably has anosia, which is he's had some kind of brain trauma. And it isn't that he can't see things. He just is the man who mistook his wife for a hat, right? So he's like, this has a child, when it's really a fire hydrant. It's not his vision, okay? His vision's fine. And you can see, even he puts on glasses and looks at things in the cartoon, Mr. Magoo. But the problem is that Mr. Magoo... And so I'm going to make it about that, because I'm uncomfortable if they're, you know, riffing on visually impaired people. I don't know. I don't want to be oversensitive, but I got friends, you know. So, but let's say he's got, and I also have friends with you know, brain damage, but not this kind. This is kind of stroke related. So let's say you don't know. I saw my grandmother do it. I saw her pour a glass of water on the stove saying, "It's the sink." Like that. So it's a real thing. And, but I'm speaking metaphorically. Like, what if you're surrounded with Magoos and the thing that you think is a child, they think is a fire hydrant. The thing that you think is a grandma, they think is a bag of garbage. The thing that you think is a value, they think is not a value.
I see where you're going.
I'm going to keep going.
I see where you're going.
If we were going to Disney World and then you saw where I was going, you'd still want me to keep going.
No, bad example.
If we were going somewhere you wanted to go and then you suddenly realized we were going there, you wouldn't want me to stop going there, would you? Hello? Hello? Did we get cut off? No, I'm kidding you. I would like to switch over. I love radio, but there's something deep in me that has always wanted to do sort of really baffling avant-garde theater. And I realize that there's kind of two avenues to get there. And I think I might take the one that's just, it seems avant-garde because it's stupid. And then that feels like a good shortcut. I'm going to take that one. But why? Well, I like things that are surprising, and I think many people do. And also, there's probably not enough. I have lots of friends who like really kind of fringe music and everything, where you can't have expectations, because if you have expectations, you're going to get really mad and get up and storm out. And so it's about sitting there and witnessing a series of experiments. And sometimes they create an imp fairy or something out of thin air, and it flies around the room and spits joy. But this is not always the case. So you're sitting there and going through this, but this doesn't happen when expectations are met necessarily. And so I like the surprise of things. So right now I'm going to do for you some theater. Now, I have seen part of more than one Beckett play. Samuel Beckett. Samuel R. Beckett. You get that?
I do.
My friend Thomas gets it.
Samuel Beckett's play that I'm now doing you for you now. So imagine yourself right now, you're at a black box theater.
Like Walmart?
No, that's big box.
Gotcha.
Black box theater is one of those small theaters adjacent to the regular theater, but nobody goes to it because there's weird stuff. Or you have to go, that's where your friend's dancing next weekend. And so it's in that. So the stage is all dark. There's nothing. There's no set. No set. This is going to be about like poor theater. You heard, you all know about Andre Gregory talking about that in My Dinner with Andre.
Tell me more about poor theater and the Polish director whose name I can't remember.
All right. But this is not that necessarily, but it is like stripped down. There's nothing there. The lights go down. And then a solitary figure walks onto the stage, lit only by a light. I really like that. I wrote that joke earlier, and I really liked it. But you don't have to. I sit here. Now I'll tell you when the actual dialogue starts. Now,
I am going to go through my letters in this desk and revisit some of my experiences with my old lovers. This one's from Shirley. Who's Shirley? I don't know a Shirley. Teddy? I know no Teddy. This isn't my desk.
All right, Act One. That was Act One. And I'm sorry, I was doing the Oliver voice, but I got very frustrated. I've been starting to do it in real life, and it's bringing me serious. And this is why. So I was moving my mom into senior land, and the fella, let's just call him Jim Smith. He's one of the people helping us get in, young Jim. And he had given me his card, and I dropped it in the hall. And then on the way back, we saw the card, and I said, what's this piece of litter? And I go, oh, no, it's your card, Jim. I must have dropped it. If somebody else had found it, they thought you had littered because it has your name on it. And he kind of smiled, and I went, Jim, we found your card, like that. And terror. He just looked at me like, oh, I had no idea. Why are you doing a bit? And I didn't know either. So I think I've been driven crazy by that. I don't know if you've had to walk down a hall really slowly multiple times, just back and forth. I think it was reality. And I love, you know, you. I think you should complain about love acts that you do for people. Otherwise, you're self-aggrandizing. It's like, oh, yeah, I helped my mom. Ah, pain in the butt, like that. Because otherwise, people go, oh, you're so good. And you go, yes, wow. So I always try to come across like I'm, you know, doing it reluctantly. Well, a lot of times I am. I think that you should do acts of compassion. They don't have to be. You can do them reluctantly. That's okay. We don't care. I don't care why you're helping the child. Help the child. That's what I say. Oh, my goodness, I didn't mean to scare you, yell at you like that. And there's a child listening going, I am the child. It's okay, I wasn't talking to you, honey.
Honey?
I know, it's just a thing I say now that I'm old. I'm sorry. I don't know. I want more terms of endearment. I got to think of them, though, for a minute. I've got to go through my... So I remember great aunt saying, kiddo. Hey, kiddo. That seems like 20s or something, though. And they were, like, from the 20s. They were great-great-aunts. That's right. They were my great-grandmother's sisters. And they grew up in, like, the 20s, and they could do 20s dances. And they were alive until I was, like, 10 or 12 or something, and I remembered it because there's this huge Irish family, and the oldest child is old enough to be the youngest child's grandmother or something. I don't know how, but there was a lot of, you know, there's a lot of age difference. So the very youngest aunts I still remembered. And,
So when I was a little kid, you know, this is the Charleston or something like that they do. Kiddo, hey, kiddo with Charleston. They'd smoke cigarettes and everything. And I go, this is great. I love my flapper great-great-aunts. And now they're all gone. But I love the terms of what's another one? Sweet. None of them said sweetie, honey, love. Oh, I had my other grandmother said love. I think so that I might do that. But that sounds weird too. You don't want to call people that. You know, how you doing, love? Ugh. So maybe the terms of endearment. Maybe they keep them for people that. Know me. I think saying them to strangers is kind of weird. I've never done that, really. The couple few times I've said bud to, like, people working on the power lines, I felt stupid. But I don't know what to say. Friend sounds like you're, you know, woo. Hello, friend. It's like, is this guy going to be trouble? You know, hey, bud. Hey, buddy. I've done that. I'm wondering whether I'm at son yet. But I think I might be able for some to do son. If I look at them and that you're my son's age, I'll say son. Maybe I'll say son. Nah, that's not me. I don't think that's me. I say friend on the air, and sometimes I say it in real life. I said it to my phlebotomist. She didn't remember me because I'm not there enough. But I was getting blood work done, and she took my blood. And I said, I appreciate you, friend. And I said her, no, did I say her name? I might have said friend. But I love her because she's so good at it. And I think it's a weird thing because there's four people or so in that little phlebotomy office. And 90% of the time I get her. Almost all but once that I've been there, I get the same one. Am I saying it right? The one that takes blood, phlebotomist? I feel like I said phrenologist, like reading your bumps. I hate going to the head bump reader. Sometimes I will just skip. I'll just keep canceling my appointment and rescheduling. That's how much I hate. I know I need to get there and have my head bumps read because phrenology is a real thing. And I don't know. My one that might have swelled up for, psychopathy or something. I could be, crazy and not know it because I haven't had my head felt. So I got to get in for that and all sorts of other quackery that I would love and I think would be beneficial. Oh my goodness. One person's quackery. So I don't want to get into it. But because I probably do health things that I think aren't valid. You know, I just all sorts of movements. If I was thinking about that when I was, again, thinking about my cult or anything, my movement, I say, well, I know there would be a series of exercises and I just get to make those up. So what are they? And then I started doing movements and see what I would do. And I didn't come up with good. It looks like I'm directing air traffic. Like, oh, those aren't very good. I need something better than that. I'm not a very good dancer. I choreographed a video once. Isn't that crazy? A friend was doing one and said, I'd like you to come up with some physical movements. And I said, I could totally do that. But because I knew I could do it because I was thinking, well, first of all, it has to be limited to not things that non-dancers can do. And I know I can just come up with a series of wacky poses to the beat. And I did. And whether it worked or not, I do not know. But all I care is that I was asked to do it. And now it's on my resume. I put it right there on my CV. It says choreographer, among the other things. I list it on my Instagram account. You'll see a whole list of things I think I'm good at. I'd be a choreographer, philosopher, poet. Oh, my goodness. Never tell somebody you're a poet. I found out in academic circles that there's real poets, real published people with PhDs who are well-known, and their poems appear in poem places. And nobody that doesn't do that is really, you're maybe a small P poet. I don't know. But a thing that you should never say to them is like, hey, I'm a poet too.
because they'll look at you like you don't know what that word, you're using the word wrong, and that kind of thing. If you were, I'd know. But here's the thing. If you were to say that to a musician, even a really accomplished musician, you could say, hey, I'm a musician too. They would look at you like, oh, crap, I wonder if they're better than me. And isn't that strange? There's something more universal about it or something. There's a greater likelihood that somebody is going to be a really good musician and you will never heard of them. It's whether they're a good poet and you never heard of them, I don't know. Maybe that's not possible. But there are things like that that you can self-identify as, and others that you can't be in that club necessarily. I've never self-identified as that necessarily, so I'm not saying I want to be in more poetry magazines. I'm fine. And also the word writer is strange to writer. And what is the other one? Because that one could go say, oh, yeah, I'm also a good writer. No. How do I know you're not? Because there are no good writers. That could be. But musicians, oh, it's humbling. I don't know any, and I've known people on all over, professional musicians, really good, accomplished people. I mean, as friends and acquaintances, people that top, you know, that's what they do, and they do it at a high level. And other people that do it on the weekends or just do it, you know, just noodle around. And it what a spectrum of talent. It's all over the place, and a lot of really good players. So many. That's the crazy thing when the YouTube really started exploding with people who play. You see something like, just take something like bass guitar, and you go, I had no idea. And there are people that were, you know, and this happens to be, you see, you'd be playing in a band, you thought, I was in Bass Guitar Magazine, I was listed as one of the top players. And then there's just a child somewhere in a room in some place with a wall color that y'all don't have the paint for in your country, playing a bass that you don't recognize from Guitar Center. And it's transcendent. And you think, oh, the power that we all have. Oh, well, is there something that's even more like music, Hardy, that we all have that I can find solace in? That when I step up to another human, I say, hey, I also am a human. And you say, well, everybody's that, so then it's discounted. It's not important. Or it's stupid then, if everybody is a human, but musician or poet, then you're special. I don't want to be special. What if being a human was great? What if it was like saying, I am a master musician or magician or physician or pataphysician? Right? But what if it was just a mere act of being alive that was amazing? Well, I don't know how many people think that, but I do. And it is the way I see the whole world. And it is a maddening equality for those who do not want to see the world for that, like that, for various reasons. But just the notion that all humans are fantastic and the pinnacle. I'm not saying of all other species. I happen to think all creatures. But I'm just trying to uplift. I have almost, but not completely, mainly human listenership. That's why I'm saying human, because I'm talking to you. If I was talking to dogs, I'd be saying different stuff. And I am. And you notice that I do. Oh, look at you. Who's that pretty thing? Who's that pretty thing? Who is that pretty thing? Who? Oh, you want to go ahead? You want to say? Who is that? You want to say? You want to say? And I'm talking to your dog. Your cat thinks it's hilarious. It's not reacting. But I'm also talking to your cat. Because I love the dog bit. Dogs are stupid. Like that. So I'm playing to two different audiences, too. Oh, bless you. And you, human.
Come on, bring it in. Give me a hug. There's all sorts of ways to do this. Don't let anybody chase them out of all that nonsense. Come on in. You're all right. You're all right. They keep switching the pee on you. That's why y'all confused, but it's not your fault. So you just bring it on here. We're going to have a big group hug. And you're going to float up to the ceiling. And it'll be all right. Because you don't have to do it alone. Feel all the hands on you. Feel all the embrace. So you see when nutty people go to their churches and stuff. You go, oh, that's the crazy stuff they're doing. Yeah, but you should feel it. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County in New York City, New York, and online worldwide, WFMU.org. Thank you for listening. And listen to Bailey and Mahogany. And next, I'll see you again next week.
Name was Ebony, her name was Mahogany, twins 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 name was Ebony.